Welcome to Fork Down in Faith. This is our first episode of Fork Down in Faith, and we have the pleasure of having these two incredible BYU football players on our podcast, Isaiah Benya.
Benya.
And Connor Pay. And we're here with our brother, Isaiah. And we're excited to welcome them and to get into it. Before we do that, though, we'd like to give a special thanks to our sponsor, Serve Clothing. If you haven't heard of them, go check them out. They sell these really cool white shirts, dress shirts that have breathable inserts on the side. You know, for people like me that sweat all the time, it keeps you fresh and clean. So go check them out. Our promo code is For Your Fam. Yeah, For Your Fam. So make sure you go check them out. Show them some love. Also, make sure you like, subscribe to this video here. And yeah, so we'll go ahead and jump in. And we'll start by just asking you guys a little bit about your background, like where you came from and how you started this journey in football.
Cool, man.
I guess I'll start.
So I'm Isaiah Benya, originally from Canada. Lethbridge, Alberta is where I graduated high school, but I was born in Edmonton. You know, most of my life, it's funny because a lot of people are like, well, where are you from? I'm like, well, I'm from Canada. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. But everybody's kind of like, well, okay, we're in Canada. And it's crazy because, man, like, my whole life, you know, just because, like, family and stuff like that, I've kind of just moved everywhere. So I've lived literally all over Canada, from West Coast to East Coast. And, you know, so at the end of the day, it's just easier for me to just be like, you know what, man? I'm from Canada.
Yeah, you're Canada.
You know what I'm saying? Because there's not one distinct spot where, you know, I kind of just had my roots behind a village, just kind of all over the place. So, yeah, man. So I'm from Canada. Started playing ball when I was 11, man. I remember because in Canada, you know, obviously we play football up there and, you know, we got the CFL, but it wasn't a huge deal for me as it was at that age, as it is, you know, here for a lot of people.
I was going to say, it's a little bit different.
You know what I'm saying?
Bro.
It's a little different, man, right? You know, people mostly just pay attention, like, hockey up there, you know, or, like, even basketball was getting big, too. But, so, yeah, football just never was an option for me. And then I remember sitting down watching the Super Bowl with the – well, I forget what year it was, but the Giants were playing the Patriots. Oh. And this is why I know I'm a Giants fan. I've been a Giants fan. I know. I know you guys always say.
But, I got nothing to say.
Anyway.
For now.
But it's funny because they won that Super Bowl, and I was like, man, like, I was watching this game for the first time I ever watched football. I was like, man, this is sick. This is something that I want to do and I know I can do. So, yeah, man, I was 11 years old at that point, and then ever since then, next summer, got pads on and got to it and never looked back since, man. It's been an awesome journey. It's brought me to where I'm at, you know, the best decision I've ever made. Wow. You know, so just a little bit about me.
Yeah, that's a hard transition, you know, Canada, yeah. The way football is played up there. I played high school ball. I was on this, it was this private school here, but we traveled up to British Columbia.
Oh, okay.
We played a bunch of teams there, and it was hard, you know, to transition and, you know, the points and field goals.
Yeah.
It was a great experience, you know, though, to have that happen. And
Yeah, man, it's cool because it's funny that you said it because it was a transition for me,
yeah.
Honestly, because, you know, the whole deal about third downs and when you really talk about, like, the specifics of the game, yeah. And, you know, different situations, different, you know, game plans for different scenarios, it's completely different than what it is here.
Yeah.
You know, and so I guess, like, when I first got to college in 2019, that whole transition was just like, wow, I'm learning a new game.
Yeah.
Pretty much, you know what I'm saying? Learn new coverages, new schemes, all types of stuff. Cause, you know, there's a lot, less you can do with 11 people on the field when in regards to when you have 12 on the field.
Right. Yeah.
Right. You know what I'm saying? There's a lot more stuff you can do with, you know, more yardage and field space than what you do here, you know? So it's just a different game, man. So, but it's been cool, you know what I'm saying? But yeah, it's definitely, it's funny that you brought that up because that was the biggest thing, man, you know, just relearning the game.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah. It's awesome. It's different.
Yeah. What about you, Connor?
Well, yeah, before I go, I don't know if I've ever asked you, how did you get recruited a Canadian high school football player to come play football in America? I don't even know if I've ever asked you that.
Yeah, so it's kind of crazy because the recruiting process up in Canada is a little different. You know what I'm saying? A lot of times, you know, coaches, it's hard for coaches and schools to come out and see you, you know what I'm saying, watch your games because, you know, the competition is a little bit different, like the competition level. And, you know, sometimes they're like, well, this guy is like, he's popping on film. You know, he looks like a freak athlete, but he's going against people who, you know what I'm saying, don't really seem to like cut the competitive level that most scouts want, right?
Yeah.
And so that was kind of my story, like for me, how I was going, man, because, you know, I in Canada, I was actually like, you know, my junior and senior year, I was the number one defensive end in the country, you know what I'm saying? Wow. Stuff like that. And then, but like, you would think that number one defensive end in the country would, you know, have like a ton of offers, five star.
Yeah.
That's not the case in Canada, you know what I'm saying? They actually only put me as a 3-star. And, which was, yeah. And so, it's funny because I finally got an offer from UConn because they had one of my friends actually got recruited by them and he was on the team at the time and he was a starter and everything. He was doing good. So they decided to look into Canadian athletes more and then they found me. And so that's how I got my first offer. And it was just through Twitter, you know, they actually came out and visited me once, you know what I'm saying? But, you know, it's kind of closer to Canada than most schools, right? So anyways, I got the offer, but, after that kind of, you know, learn how to put myself out there more, share my film on Twitter, reach out to coaches and, you know, cause I didn't have nobody to tell me how it's done. Like I wasn't around anybody who's been through the recruiting process who got to that level. Right. So I kind of was just like feeling it out for myself, man. And I, finally got a text back from Boise State's coach, head coach now. By the time he was a defensive ends coach, and he came out and visited me, man, and got me out on an official visit to Boise and offered me there. And so that was my second bigger offers. And then after that, it's kind of, you know, once you rack in a couple, it just starts coming in more. You know, people don't even bother talking to you anymore. They just say, oh, they offered him? All right, listen, offer. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah.
And so that's kind of how my recruiting process blew up more. And then, yeah, man, Brian Harsin was the head coach at the time. And he was like, you know, we've had some good history with Canadian athletes coming to Boise State and all that stuff. And so let's go find another one. That's pretty much why it kind of worked out for me.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
And you hit on it a bit, your position that you play.
Yep.
So how'd you come to be like, this is the position I want to play and kind of dialed in on that?
Yeah. So it's crazy because like my whole life, I was a bigger kid, you know, so I started off.
You 6'4", yeah, bro. 6'5", 6'4".
6'4", man. Okay, so, you know, I started off as like, I started off as center and then like nose guard.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Hey, let's go.
Like, let's put him on the line.
maybe he does belong in the A-gaps. That's what I tell him in practice all the time. You don't belong in the A-gaps. Stay out there on the edge.
Stay out there, man.
I didn't know you played center. Maybe you do belong in the A-gap, man.
Oh, yeah. I was in the trenches, man, from the jump. You know what I'm saying? But, yeah, and, like, slowly I started, like, moving out. So then I played guard and, you know, D-tackle. Then I went out to tight end and D-end. And it kind of – by the time I went to high school, like, senior year, like, I'm playing everything. So I kind of got to taste, you know, get a taste, except for quarterback. That's one position they just didn't want. Yeah. You know, so like, yeah, we could use you for better things, dude. So, you know, I kind of had a taste for everything, you know, and but – I don't know what it is, man. I think like my junior year, I was kind of bouncing back from defensive end and middle linebacker, just Mike linebacker, and just rushing the passer. That was that was my thing. I just knew, yeah. You know what I'm saying? Just kind of like had that like, click for me, you know, I was like, yeah, this is my position. And so ever since then, I kind of just wanted to be around that kind of part of the game, that aspect of the game, you know, on defense. Cause I liked offense, you know, I mean, I love scoring touchdowns. I love, you know, running people over, but you know, it's just
something hitting. About hitting somebody.
You know what I'm saying? It's all about like, posting your will, bro. Exactly. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Yeah. I love the chase, man. So yeah, that's it just stuck with me since then. So that's how I decided my position.
Nice.
Yeah.
Dope.
Hit us up, Connor.
Connor, yeah.
Yeah, well, I think I was born in San Diego, California. Lived there till I was 7. Then my dad's job changed. A company up here bought the company he was working for. So that brought us up here. And we moved to Highland. So I'm a lone peaker.
Okay.
If you guys are familiar.
LP, yeah.
LP. And and so this is home. This is home, really. And kind of similar to Isaiah, I didn't play tackle football till I was probably 12 years old. My dad actually wanted us to wait until we were in high school to play tackle, because my dad played at BYU as well and played in the NFL.
Oh, man.
And he was just very cognizant of what that's done to his head.
Oh, yeah.
And some things like that. And he was like, I don't really want my kids that young hitting their heads that many times. And so it was always, you're not playing until high school. You're not playing until high school. And I finally, like, once fourth, fifth grade hit, all my friends started playing. I'm like, Dad, come on, man. All my friends are playing. And, but then it came down to seventh grade, and I was like, okay, maybe. Then it came down to fifth grade, and he finally let me start. But like Isaiah, I was a bigger kid, so I've been on the line pretty much from the jump.
You was an X-Man.
Exactly. I don't know if they have those rules in Canada, but they slap this big X on the back of your helmet that says, you're fat, you can't touch the ball. 200
pounds.
You can't touch the ball. Because everybody knows if that X wasn't on my helmet, I would have played quarterback.
Sure.
I would venture to say that there's one quarterback on our team who can throw a ball better than me.
One?
Jake. That's it.
You know, Jake. I've never seen you throw a ball.
What?
I've seen you snap a ball. I haven't seen you throw one, though.
I play catch before every walkthrough, bro.
Man. I'm going to have to start.
You're out playing. You're playing dodgeball or whatever. No, whatever. I'm just kidding. I would have loved to play quarterback, but nope, they put that X on my helmet, and they're like, no, you can't do any of that. So,
tough, man.
Yeah, I was on the line.
How did they do that?
I know. It's crazy.
Messed up.
To think about, I wouldn't be surprised if that gets like abolished soon, because people are going to get their feelings hurt.
Yeah.
You know, isn't that kind of the trend the world's going right now, that everyone finds a way to be butthurt?
Yeah.
There's no way they're going to let that X-Men thing slide, labeling their kids as obese or something. So basically was on the line my whole career. You know, I honestly, for a long time, it was always in the back of my mind, because my dad played offensive line at BYU. Played professionally, like, okay, football's probably going to be my route. But really, up until high school, I didn't think it was going to be, because I was on the bigger side, but I wasn't as big as some of the biggest kids in the grade. I was pretty normal sized. I was maybe 6 foot, 190 as a freshman.
Yeah.
You know, so it's not like I was gigantic. And
right.
I was much better at baseball than I was at football.
Wow.
And so I was kind of like, okay, like, got pulled up to the varsity team as a freshman for baseball. Didn't do that in football or basketball. So it's kind of like, okay, maybe baseball might be the future, you know. But then kind of the summer between my sophomore and junior year, or freshman and sophomore year, sorry. Grew 5 inches, gained 70 pounds.
Yeah.
You know, next thing you know, I show up as a sophomore and I'm 6'5", 270, you know, a little different.
Yeah.
And then sophomore year of high school, ended up earning the starting job at tackle. And after my sophomore season, I didn't even know how recruiting worked. Like, I just knew people made highlights on Huddle.
Yeah.
That's pretty much all I knew.
Put a little circle around.
That's much all I knew. And, like, I had connections to, like, the college football world through my dad.
Right.
Right. Like some of his former teammates were coaches in the business, like Garrett Touje, who was the O-line coach at BYU when I was younger, Mike Empey, and some of those guys. And so, like, there were some connections, and so they were able to give me, like, some feedback on, like, hey, this is what this is what college coaches are going to be looking for in your film.
Right.
But like as a sophomore, I wasn't thinking about any of that yet.
Right.
So just put out a highlight film my sophomore year. Ended up getting a call from Kalani and Mike Empey, who was the O-line coach at the time, who's a close family friend. And, you know, his son, James Empey, was the center before me at BYU. And they called me into Kalani's office and offered me my first scholarship. And then it just kind of, similar to you, it's just once you get that first one, people just start calling. Just start rolling in. And so then all my other offers followed that. And then, you know, made my decision to come to BYU pretty early. I committed the summer before my junior year.
Wow.
So really in between my sophomore and junior year, I committed to BYU. And I think I just, you know, it's where my dad played. I grew up going to games there. It's kind of new. I've bled blue my entire life. And the only time that ever wavered is when they fired Ty Detmer and Mike Empey and stuff. Because again, those are both my dad's teammates at BYU, family friends. Those are the guys I wanted to play for. And then when they fired them, I didn't decommit, but I reopened my recruitment a little bit, took some visits and stuff at the end of my senior year. And then once they hired Jeff Grimes, I was like, okay, this is an O-line dude.
Yeah.
One of the best in the country.
Yeah.
So I was like, all right, I definitely want to come play for him. And unfortunately, I only got 1 year with him. Just my freshman year. But that's kind of my journey. It's kind of how I ended up here now.
Yeah. Talk about that experience. Cause I went through the recruitment process, and then went on a mission and came back home and had no offers. And so I had to start all over, and I just got discouraged and didn't really have the willpower to keep chasing it because of that, you know? And so talk about that journey. What kept you guys going, you know, through that journey of being recruited and staying committed to those schools?
Yeah, I mean, for me, I was recruited later into my high school career. You know, I didn't come in until halfway through my senior year season.
Wow.
So, you know, I kind of kept my recruitment window a little open, a little longer, you know what I'm saying? Kind of see my options. But, that's tough because I didn't serve a mission. I decided just to take the football route, not to risk it, you know what I'm saying? And so that was kind of just like what I felt was the best thing for me. Cause you know, you guys kind of know how hard it is to get
in Canada,
you know what I'm saying? So like, I can't really, you know, didn't want to play with that. Well, I had it. So I just chose not to go, man. You know, kind of made it my priority. So,
Do you feel like those opportunities may have been gone?
Yep.
If you had served, they wouldn't have waited for you, you think?
No, they told me they wouldn't.
Really?
Yeah.
That's what my high school coach, he wasn't a member, but he was telling me, like, cause I played basketball and football. He was like, bro, you stupid, man. What are you doing, man? And I turned in my papers and got called to Canada.
So, oh, no way.
Yeah, BC. Oh, yeah. Hey, so, man. Cool. But, man, I love football. I love football. I love basketball. Right. That was my main goal, was to make it to the league. And so, to kind of have that not ripped away, but just, you know, like part of me like taken, I was like, man, like I wish, you know, I could have, pursue that more. But it's good to see you guys do your thing. You know, it helps me out a little bit.
It's a weird dynamic.
It is.
It's a weird dynamic because it's like you have some of these schools that are totally okay with it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have these other schools that are like, no.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and it's like, and especially like through my high school years, wasn't super into church stuff, wasn't super active. And so, but then once I got into my senior year, I started to turn things around, started really thinking about a mission. And that's also around the same time I kind of opened my recruitment back up a little bit. And so, you know, then all of a sudden I get all these other schools calling me because obviously I played a lot better as a senior than I did as a sophomore. So now it's like, you know, I'm getting calls from Oregon, USC, Ohio State, you know, all those schools. And they always the first question they ask me is, are you going on a mission?
Wow.
And I would be like, as of right now, that's the plan. They said, okay, we think you're a great player. we're not going to be able to offer you a scholarship.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's like, okay, sounds good.
Wow. Let's see.
Sounds good. You know, yeah. And it's interesting how it's shifted now.
Oh, yeah.
Where, you know, schools don't care as much.
Right.
As they did when I was in high school. I don't know why. Maybe it's because of the transfer portal and things. Like, we wait 2 years for a kid, whatever. The whole roster is going to be different by then anyways.
That's that was going to be my next question is, like, is the issue of them just waiting the 2 years for you, or is it like them filling space? Like, is there a reason behind why they're just like,
this is my thought on it. I think that before the transfer portal era, if you had a really high level freshman recruit, you could plug and play them right away.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They can go get that kid, same kid who has college experience from the transfer portal now.
Okay. Right.
So I think there's less, especially for the high level recruits, who are planning on serving missions, there's less of, like, I don't know if I'd call it a desperation, but like an immediate need where it's like, if you're a 4 or 5 star offensive tackle, you would come in and start right away at that school.
Gotcha.
And it's like, they may need that, but now it's like, okay, you're planning on serving a mission. Okay, great. We'll go grab a 2 year kid from the portal to hold things down while you're gone.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
You know, I think that's what I think.
Okay.
I think it's just a less pressing of an issue. Cause my little brother is a senior in high school right now. He's one of the top offensive line recruits in the country. And he's actually committing today. And his top three are Oregon, Oklahoma, and BYU.
Whoa.
So,
take Oregon, bro. No. I love BYU.
I honestly thought he was going to commit to Oregon. I really did. After his official visit, because Dan Lanning got up there at his official visit and gave him a 20-minute presentation on the benefit of missions.
Wow.
Mm.
And what he thought Austin, my little brother, would bring to Oregon because he's a return missionary.
Wow. Mm.
And it's like, when I was in high school, they would have been like, you're an idiot
for going
on a mission. Yeah, and you're going to ruin your body. And all
this
stuff.
Yeah.
And now you got the head coach of the number one team in the country giving this high school kid a presentation, all the great things he's going to get from serving his mission.
Wow.
And that was so big for Austin, my brother. Like, I swear, I thought he was going to commit to Oregon right after the visit.
Yeah.
So we'll see. I mean, secretly, I'm hoping for the Cougs, you know.
That'd be dope, too.
But, you know, just because that'd be a cool family legacy.
Yeah.
To have my dad and then all three of his sons all play at BYU.
That's really
pretty special. Cool thing. But we'll see. He commits in a few hours, so I don't really know what he's gonna do yet.
Dang.
But I think, just because of the way Oklahoma's doing, I think it's really between BYU and Oregon.
Oh, okay.
You know, because Oregon, Oklahoma's kind of having a tough year.
Like OSU or
no, Oklahoma.
That would be tough, man.
Yeah.
Cool.
So I think it's the transfer portal that's changed that. You can get guys you need while guys serve missions.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Whereas back then it was rough, man.
Yeah.
It was rough.
Yeah.
It's like, you commit now.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Man, well, moving on, what's one of the most memorable moments for you on at BYU, like on the field?
Hmm. You want to start this one? Because you've had a lot. Hey, I have mine. But, you know, I'm going to start. I'm going to say
mine. Yeah, go ahead.
I actually have a lot. I have a lot of good.
Memories at BYU while you were at Boise State don't count. They don't count.
That's good to say, man. Really, my first favorite memory that comes up about, you know, playing at BYU is because it was my first time ever actually playing at BYU. Mm. When I was at Boise State.
Oh, boy. Here we go.
Yeah. So, it's 2021, man.
Gosh.
Hey, I'm going to bring it up. I got to bring it up.
No, go ahead. It's 3 years in the past. Hey, I'm over it.
No one knows about this story, man.
I'm over it.
2021, you know, it was like, what, the sixth game of the season?
Yeah.
Sixth game of the season.
So yeah, we were 5-0.
Number 10 in the country.
Yeah.
You know, Boise State, we were like, shoot, 3-2.
Really?
Yeah, we weren't doing too hot because we just lost to Oklahoma State. We also lost to UCF, you know, and so it's kind of like a slow start to the year. So, you know, the next biggest game for us, because at Boise State, you know, the BYU game was already always kind of like a big one, you know.
And,
Boise State always wanted to.
It's a rivalry for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. I feel like it's more like a. big bro, little bro relationship. You know, now I can say that. You know, say now I can acknowledge that. But
so who's big bro? Who's little bro?
Oh, come on.
Without a doubt, who's big bro? Without a doubt. But at the time, you know what I'm saying? Like, you always want to go in there and, you know, play your best against, you know, that. So, yeah, we came in to Provo, man. You know, we were all juiced up, and, you know, we took advantage of it, man. And I feel like at the time, that number 10 team kind of took their foot off the gas, man. And, yeah, we took advantage of it. We came in and took them off the pedestal, man.
Took them off. I was at that game.
There's one key fact that he's leaving out. I didn't play in that game.
That was the reason
for the downfall on offense.
Yeah, because your offense, they did go through it, man.
I'm just kidding.
Fumbling.
Yeah, no, I did get benched for that one game that year for some reason. I never got an explanation from my coach, but they pulled me for that one game and then put me right back in the next one. I was like, all right, man, I've been starting the whole year. I was like, we're 5-0. I don't know why we're changing things up.
Well, shoot, man.
But hey, it was fun on the sideline. I didn't know you back then, but it was fun to watch you tear us up.
Yeah, it was a fun game, man. And even playing Lavelle Edwards Stadium, like, even being the away team, it was still so cool. You know what I'm saying? Just like how electric the environment was, the atmosphere. And yeah, man, so that was my first fun memory of playing at BYU. But, you know, obviously me being here for the past two seasons, obviously that's grown. The Kansas State game was electric. It was super fun. Even last year, we had a couple games that were fun, man. And, yeah, but that's the first one for sure.
Nice. Yeah. I was going to say, I knew for sure you were going to bring up – you had to bring up K-State. You guys played so good.
That was insane.
You guys played so good. I have a lot of memories now, because I think I don't know how many starts I have now, 40 something. You know, and so it's like I've been a starter since 2021, you know. And I was on the 2020 team, and so there was a lot of cool memories, you know, because there's obviously, you know, the kind of the more fun memories, like going to Coastal Carolina on 2 days notice. You know, where it's like on Thursday they said, hey, like, it was just such a whirlwind. This isn't really like this is an amazing memory. COVID was crazy.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like we came into the team meeting on a Thursday, and they were like, hey, this team, Coastal Carolina, is willing to play us this week. We had lost our game or something because of the other team's COVID issues. And they were like, but we have to go there. Do you guys want to prepare for 2 days and go play them? And at the time, we were like, we were top 10 in the country. You know, we were 8-0 or something, 9-0. And we were like, heck yeah, let's do it. So they sent us home, and they're like, okay, come back. Practice is at 8 p.m. Because the coaches, like, needed to put together some form of a game plan.
Yeah.
So we let our team meetings at 1:30. We left that. The coaches took the next 6 hours or so to put together a game plan. We come back into the IPF at 8 p.m. and practice till about 10.
Wow.
And then we go home and we have practice again the next morning at like 8 o'clock. And so in pads, both practices, if I remember right. And at 8 a.m. we practice, we shower up, we pack, we get on a plane, and we fly across the country to Coastal Carolina and then play them on Saturday. And obviously everybody knows how that game went. We ended up being a yard short. And there was the big fight at halftime. And
that's when Zach Wilson tackled.
Yes.
That video was wild. I remember seeing that.
Like, yeah.
That's crazy. I'm trying to do that to him. At the time.
Well, it was just like they pinned him and they pancaked him on the pick. And it's like, okay, yeah, you got him. They waited for him to get back up, grabbed him, threw him down again, waited for him to get back up. Play's over.
Wow.
Slam him again. That's when Isaiah Kafusi sprinted out on the field, started fighting him. The bench is cleared. And like, man, thinking back, I was like, dude, I was a freshman. I was so inconsequential to the team. I should have ran out there and started throwing haymakers. Like, well, if they suspend me, it doesn't matter. Right? It doesn't matter.
Thank you, helmet.
Yeah. But that's like the most angry I've ever seen Kalani. Kalani was like shaking the rail, like walking into the locker room, trying to go fight fans.
No way.
Wow.
Coastal Carolina was the craziest place I've ever played. Wow. Easily. 5
The game sounds crazy, bro. Yeah.
Nope. They were one of, I actually considered going there. They were one of my offers.
I'm glad you did it.
That'd be crazy, man.
Bro, that would have been.
Balling on the beach. Balling on the beach, man, that's crazy.
Oh, man.
No, but I think kind of like a real football memory, I guess, is the Utah game in 2021 was my second start of my career. That was my redshirt freshman year. And so just like having lost that game 10 times in a row, you know, to go out, and that was one of the, that was my first time experiencing Lavelle Edwards as a as full capacity because of COVID.
Oh yeah.
And then I distinctly remember that last drive where it was like, we had to get a first down. They're a fantastic run defense. That's what they're known for.
Yep.
And we just shoved it right down their throat on three straight plays, got the first down. And I remember when Tyler, we ran a zone play to the left and Tyler got the first down and all of us just like just realized that we just won the game. And it was like that moment was pretty special where it was just like, that was, nobody thought we would ever dominate them in the trenches ever.
Mm-hmm.
And we kicked the crap out of them up front the entire game. And so like as an offensive lineman, like that's so like fulfilling. And so I think, when we beat Utah, that was pretty special. That whole stretch, you know, then Arizona State the next week was so crazy. And outside of that, I would probably just say the 2022 double overtime win against Baylor was pretty cool to beat a top 10 team at home in double OT. That was pretty special. But yeah, those are just a couple off the top of my head.
Nice.
That's dope.
Yeah, thanks for sharing those.
Yeah.
I mean, so both of you decided BYU, right? And Connor, you gave us a little background of why that was your choice to go to BYU. Isaiah, but then both of you can answer the second part. But why BYU of all the schools that was offered you? And then for both of you, like, how has that dynamic of being at BYU and being part of the BYU family, like, what impressions or how has that been for you guys overall, just being part of the BYU family?
Yeah, I mean, for me, coming out of the transfer portal, it was after my fourth season. So, you know, at this point, I'm kind of saying to myself, like, all right, this next decision has to be, you know, the right one, you know. And I remember at the time, I was kind of just like, you know, I was just going through it a little bit more because that whole, you know, process of leaving, you know, I mean, 4 years at Boise State, that's, you know, that's like my whole life at the time, you know what I'm saying? At least of my adulthood, at least. So, you know, that's all I kind of knew, you know, and so just kind of like leaving that, I was like, man, like if I'm going to leave, you know, I got to do something right by myself and by my career, truthfully. And it's crazy, man, because, you know, at the time I didn't like BYU. You know, in fact, I even tried coming to BYU in high school and everything. They were kind of played with me in the recruiting process, but, you know, they didn't
Coach
really.
Mendon, oh.
Yeah. They didn't really, you know, show me like, well, any serious interest until signing day. Mm-hmm. I was like, well, y'all a little too late, man. You know what I'm saying? So after that point, I've kind of just had like a little bit of bad taste in my mouth when it comes to the Cougars. You know what I'm saying? Then going to Boise State, that on adds on top of it. You know, like, yeah. You know what I'm saying? So like, I'm thinking BYU's the last place I'm gonna go. Truthfully,
yeah.
And it's crazy because while I was at Boise State that last season, Kelly Papinga, my position coach now here at BYU, was just got there for, that one season. And, you know, it's crazy because he was my position coach for that 6 months. And, you know, we had a cool friendship then, you know, great connection. And but, you know, I didn't think he was going to go back to BYU either, you know what I'm saying? So but after that season, I hit the portal, man, and I was like, you know, I don't know what I'm going to do. I don't know what schools are going to come out and try to recruit me, where I'm going to go next. All I know is that, like, wherever I go, I really have to lock in and make the best of my situation. And so with all that constantly being in my head, man, like, always just thinking about it, kind of, like, drives you in, like, a little rabbit hole, you know, and you kind of start to – you know, I started to obviously distance myself with, you know, my friends at the time because they're still on the team and they feel some type of way. So I didn't really have nobody to talk to, man. So I got to kind of like a dark place, honestly, and within that whole process. And then I was like, you know what, man, like the only way that I'm going to make it through, I'm going to make my career, like, bring it back to life. You know what I'm saying? The only way I'm going to do it isn't going to be on my own. You know what mm-hmm. I'm saying? Like, mm-hmm. that time I wasn't very much in the church. I wasn't really paying too much attention to my faith, yeah. you know, that side of my life. And so, man, I remember I was like, you know what, God, whatever happens with this, you know, whether I keep playing football or not, whether I'm, you know, I'm going to be still here or I move back to Canada or something like that, whatever happens, man, it's, I give it all to you. You know what I'm saying? The rest of my career is, you know, it's going to be how you see fit. Mm-hmm. And so it's crazy, man. The next day, I get a call from Kelly Papinga. He's like, hey, man, mm-hmm. I'm at BYU. And I was like, dang, man. You know what I'm saying? Like, you was out of here that fast. That fast he was out of here, huh? Shoot, you know what I'm saying? He's like, yeah, man. You know, I'm sitting here with the D staff, and we saw that, you know, obviously your name's still in the portal, and wondering if you want to come check out BYU. You know what I'm saying? I was like, and then when he, after he hit me, I was like, nah. You know, so I was like, right, man, there's no way, man. You know what I'm saying? Like, man, it's crazy how fast. I didn't think it was going to be that fast and that, you know, boom in your face, you know what I'm saying? Kind of like an answer to my prayer, but, you know, it was. And it was something that caught me off guard. But I was like, for some reason, I felt in my heart, I was like, you know what? Shoot, this is the Lord's university, man. If I'm doing this for him, I might as well give them the time of day. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? I might as well give them the chance. And so, yeah, man, the next week, I went on a visit. It was less than 24 hours. Wow. I was there that evening, did my photo shoot, did like a small trip around campus. It was middle of December, so it was like, you know, snow was everywhere. Yeah. I couldn't really get on and walk around, you know what I'm saying? But, and then, yeah, man, went to bed. Next morning, woke up, had my meetings, and got lunch, and I was out. Went back to Boise after that fast. Yeah. But it's crazy, man, because I remember just coming here, and it was like a sense of peace, man, relief for me, you know what I'm saying? And I remember standing there outside the student athlete building, just kind of looking up. I was like, man, like, this is my spot. This is right for me. You know, it's crazy, man. It's like everything just took a 180 for me. And so that's why I ended up committing, bro. And I didn't even entertain anything else after that. And it was crazy, man, because, you know, after I came on this visit, more schools, obviously, like I said, you know how the recruiting process happens. Once, you know, you get an offer, they start rolling in, which they did, man. But I knew this was the place I needed to be in. My life would change from doing it, man. And it's the best decision I've ever made.
That's awesome, man.
So, yeah. But how it's affected me, though, honestly, like, oh, man, in ways that I can't even describe. And, like, in countless ways, I've been blessed, man. Even, like, just the way that I live my life, my priorities, my perspectives, my relationships. You know, I feel like environment has such a huge impact on the type of person you are and, you know, your habits, obviously, too. And the influence, truthfully. And, you know, all with all that being said, it's just impacted me for the better in every which way. So,
right. That's dope. That's a testament, man, to revelatory experiences. Like, you followed your gut, you followed your prayer, and and then everything from there just basically expanded and got better, man. So thanks for sharing that.
Yeah, absolutely.
In the way you did,
for sure. And he got the best locker buddy ever.
The best, man. Yours truly, this guy right here, man.
I know. I remember the day you got here.
Yeah.
And I look up and I see that the locker next to me is empty. I slap up this picture. I was like, who the crap is this guy? And I was like, who is Isaiah Bagnaw? Did not say your name yet.
Yeah.
But no, Zay and I have been locker buddies now for 2 years.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, it's my dog, man.
My dog.
For real.
Yeah. It's hard, man. It's hard. I think that's something that, you know, being in the church, most athletes don't talk about. But like, balancing your faith and also, you know, playing sports, you know, and how difficult that could be at times. And I remember, like, even in high school, you know, there was times where I was, you know, my mom would tell me, of course, you know, you better come to church, you know. But I would be traveling, you know, and on Sundays and stuff, and realizing, like, man, I'm missing out, you know, I need to be at church. And but yeah, it was it took me a minute to get my act together. I love what you shared about how, you know, it's through that dark time that you experienced that you reached out to your Father in heaven, and he answered back to you. And yeah, talk more about that. Talk a little bit more to that point, where, like, how are you maintaining that now? And maybe you can answer this well, Connor. How do you guys maintain your faith with playing football and trying to be the best athlete you can be?
Well, I think that's one of the special things about BYU is because it's a private church-sponsored school, it's infused into everything. We can't go to football without the gospel being a part of it. You know, we can't go to class without the gospel being a part of it. You know, and that's, I think that's one of the strengths of BYU, because it changes people, right? And, you know, I think it was interesting to me that I was having a conversation with our O-line coach, TJ Woods, a couple weeks ago, and he always makes this joke to us. He's like, you guys need to play good because I want to retire here. Like, he loves BYU. He loves it. And he was like, BYU has all these great things. He's like, I love coaching football here. It's fun, and we're at the highest level now, and it's, He's like, deep down, he's like, BYU makes me a better man. Mm-hmm. He's like, that's why I love it here. Mm. And it was kind of interesting because, like, Coach Woods, non-member.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. Christian family, you know, strong Christian family. But at the same time, he sees the value that having that faith-based institution brings to him and his family. Yeah. And he tells us about that all the time. Yeah, you know, how he feels like being a coach here helps him be a better husband and a better father. And I feel like that extends to us as well. You know, even though, like, we're not married and we don't have those same responsibilities, it makes you a better person being here because, you know, the coaches can get up in a team meeting and more often than not, Kalani's sharing a gospel principle during the team meeting, putting a scripture up on the board, you know, and I think that also attracts the right type of people. You know, and I think that's something that we're seeing on this team is from coaches, support staff to players, we have people with the right mindset and have absorbed and accepted the culture of BYU and the culture Kalani is trying to drive. And it's been a major part of why we're successful.
Yeah.
So I think BYU makes it really easy to balance that football, school, faith, life, because in reality, I think if we're doing it right, they're all intertwined.
Right.
And, you know, the gospel should affect every aspect of your life, not just some. Mm-hmm. And BYU makes that easy.
Yeah, gotcha. That's dope.
Is that the general response even for players that are not members?
Yeah.
Is that kind of like that feeling that you guys get from players?
Absolutely. I mean, like, it's at the end of the day, it's like, I feel like it's the reason why we're so good, especially this year, is because it's like a collective effort. You know what I'm saying? A collective understanding of, you know, what it means to be, a high class performer and a high class individual. And that's one thing that a lot of people I feel like don't kind of like who are members don't quite understand is that a lot of the guidelines, a lot of the basis in which the church and just the gospel honestly is built off of that foundation, those foundational qualities and aspects are the exact blueprint of what a high class individual is. You know what I'm saying? It's eating clean, it's not lying, not stealing, you know, all these. And that's just like obviously the simple aspect of it. It goes deeper than that, but you know, once you are around that, you have that like I said, the environment that kind of influence on your daily life, you know, you tend to see that and see like, man, that is, you know, a great quality. That's what a man should be like. That's, you know, how you should treat your family. That's how you should, you know, have a relationship with God, you know, and seeing all those blessings within. I feel like, yeah, you know, for them, they kind of see that and they buy into it, and they get to, you know, reap the benefit and truly be blessed from it as well.
Awesome. Yeah, they may not necessarily see the ins and outs of why, especially with things like the honor code, but they see the benefits.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Where it's like, if you live the honor code to the T, you're putting yourself in the best position to be the best athlete you possibly can.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So like, it's easy. You know, I think the honor code is our superpower in a lot of ways.
Oh yeah.
Where it's like, if you live this way, you're putting yourself in the best position to play in the NFL.
Yeah. Right.
Like, isn't that what you want to do? You want to perform the best?
You know.
Live the honor code.
Yeah.
You know, you don't have to believe in all the same principles that we believe, but I think being high class individuals is just another way for the team to be united in something off the field.
Yeah.
All right. That's something where we have all these goals, all these things we do all year long where we're united on the field, training, off season, all that stuff, film work, everything, weight room. But this gives us something that's almost a higher purpose that we're unified in, where it's like, hey, we know that the underlying thing we're trying to do is become better men together. And in turn, that's going to make us better football players.
Agreed.
That's awesome. I'm not going to lie. I've always wondered about that because I'm a late convert. I was 23 when I was baptized. And I always wondered about individuals who went to BYU who weren't members, like how they – whether it's just students or athletes, right? How they adjust to like just the cultural difference, you know, but having your perspective and realizing that, oh, they may not know and have the understanding that we do about the faith, but the honor code basically presents a better and higher way of living for people that want that.
Right.
So,
and I would say, I would put a caveat that it definitely is a culture shock.
Oh yeah,
for a lot of people, just being in the BYU environment.
You know what I'm saying? I was like, "Well,
yeah, like for someone who like is a member, it's still a culture shock."
Yeah,
right?
It was like, yeah.
But I think too, especially that players, you know, when they come from like predominantly African American communities, and you show up to BYU's campus, you know, and you go to class, like, and there's like two or three others in your class of people, it's a little different, like, right? It's a little different.
Like a sword,
obviously. Obviously, in the locker room, it's not like that because it's obviously way more diverse than the general campus.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Especially now.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. And so, you know, Jake Retzlaff has talked about this in some of his interviews that he's done recently about how being at BYU has strengthened his faith in Judaism.
Wow.
Right. And how it's had a positive effect. And he talks about that, how just being at a faith-based institution has made him a better member of his faith.
Wow.
And I think a lot of guys on the team feel that way who aren't members but are people of faith.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have a huge group of the Christian guys on the team that go to Center Point together every Sunday in Orem. You know, and so I think obviously culturally very different, but I think principally it's, you know, pretty in line with how people want to live. May not be how they're living at the time. And sometimes when people first come in, it's a little bit of a tug of war, you know, to get them to live that honor code because they maybe don't quite yet understand its purpose and how it can actually help them. But I think as they mature and are at BYU for longer and see the benefits, those young freshmen who turn into sophomores and eventually leaders of the team kind of see the change that BYU can have on them.
Yeah.
And I think that makes the culture shock easier to handle.
Yep.
In my opinion, you would know better than me, but
no, I couldn't say it better. Mm. Yep. That's 100% the case.
Yeah.
100%.
That's dope though. I mean, because that's what you want though. Like, especially as a coach, you know, like you want your players to be winners on the field and off the field. And so that honor code and you know, having, you know, an environment where you can, you know, still be yourself, but have this like standard, can really shape you, and you can carry that on, you know, whether you play in the league or, you know, creating a family, going to work or whatever, like those principles can be with you forever. So that's amazing. That's good to hear that. 'Cause I remember coming in, you know, when Coach Sataki was first starting out, and it was wild, man. It was wild, man. It scared me because I had just got off my mission like a year ago. And so I was like, man, like, I don't know if I'm ready for this. Like, I don't know. Yeah. I'm still kind of feeling weak. But
Kalani definitely has a different approach, too.
Oh, yeah.
And Bronco did a much more approachable type of coaching. I remember my freshman year, Bronco was still the head coach of high school. That was his last season. And I took a recruiting visit and I went and sat down in his office and we read sections of the Ensign.
Oh, wow.
We didn't even talk about football.
Wow.
And at the time, I was not into that gospel stuff. And I was like, no chance I'm coming here. Like, that was the weirdest meeting I've ever been a part of.
That's wild.
And, you know, and then the next year, Kalani gets hired and you come in and it's like you're immediately part of his family.
Yeah.
Right. And I was like, this feels like home.
I feel like Polynesians have that, you know.
Yes.
Man, they have that ability to do that.
That sense of community.
Yeah.
That love. They adopt you into that immediately.
Yeah.
The second they're united with you in something, you're a family member for life.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Most definitely.
100%.
That's sick. Before we split, because I know we got some rapid fire questions for you guys. But I want, if you could speak to people growing up, because being a D1 athlete is no easy feat. I mean, there's a lot of hard work, dedication, sacrifice of time, body, everything that goes into it. So what would you guys speak to, you know, rising generations who are trying to accomplish what you two have accomplished in terms of obtaining a D1 athlete status? What type of behaviors, mindset goes into that as you guys have attained what you have attained?
For me, I'd say, truthfully, what comes down to finding success within one's, you know, purpose and one's dream, for especially at a young age, is to honestly just simple it down to being intentional about following God's plan for you, you know? And it's kind of just like, you know, like you get blessings, of course, you know, you're being blessed, of course, and you will be throughout your life. But it's the intentional act of putting forth effort, you know, saying, okay, you know, I'm grateful for these blessings you give me. Let me, you know, work and show you why I appreciate it. Like, for example, like for me, you know what I'm saying? Like, because it gives you purpose and it gives you grace.
Mm-hmm.
And without those two things, you know, it's very hard, I feel. For me, at least, it's very hard for me to, you know, find success or even just, you know, live with internal peace. You know what I'm saying? So it's funny because at BYU, when we walk out to the field, this poster, this sign, it says, the Lord loves effort, right? And, like, I kind of sat there and I was looking at it all the time. I'm reading, I'm like, you know, what does that really mean?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? What does that truly mean? And, you know, when God is giving you, when you're blessed, you know what I'm saying, with something, this wonderful opportunity, and you don't take advantage of it, you don't go about it, you don't go full tilt with it, it's kind of just like taking his blessing and just being like, you know, whatever. You know, it's not that big of a deal. You know what I'm saying? I feel like for me, I've had to learn that, like, man, God has blessed me with this wonderful car that I drive. Let me show him how much I appreciate it by, you know, keeping it clean, you know, taking care of it, checking on it, checking my oil, all this stuff, you know, simple things, right?
Yeah.
But it is showing him how much I care and appreciate, you know, his blessings. And therefore, you get blessed for doing that. You know what I'm saying? The blessings will roll in. And, you know, that's the best way I've found, you know, of living my life. It gives me purpose. It lets me live in grace. And it allows me to, you know, further gain my confidence and my internal peace so that it can eventually become me spreading that to others and, you know, helping them. You know, because you can't help nobody if you don't help yourself first, truthfully. Mm-hmm. It's like you can't truly love something if you don't, or somebody, if you don't love yourself first. You know what I'm saying? It all starts intrinsically. And so
No doubt. That's
just, you know, the kind of detailed explanation of that. But yeah, man, be intentional with God's plan for you.
Awesome, bro.
I would say, especially like in the pursuit of becoming a college athlete, you have to understand that there are going to be sacrifices. Mm-hmm. You know, there were, and it's hard in high school because most of those sacrifices are going to come in the form of social sacrifices.
Yeah.
In high school. Mm-hmm. You know, there was, I, from the second I got into high school and I made the decision that I wanted to be a Division I athlete, I trained every day outside of the high school and normal practice hours. And that meant a lot of nights where I wasn't hanging out with my friends, you know? And so there's a price for everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I think just understanding that you're going to come to a crossroads at some point where you have to make a choice between whether you're going to do something that benefits you, in your pursuit of college athletics, or is a chance to go hang out with your buddies.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And you're going to have to make, and honestly, if you time manage the right way, you can avoid it.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. But there are going to be certain things where it's like, hey, you know I got to train at 7 a.m. tomorrow. I'm getting invited to this party. I know I'm going to be out late. Like, there were a lot of times where I chose not to go,
mm-hmm.
you know, or because, you know, I was going to perform at this camp or something. I'm like, I need my sleep. You know, there's going to be sacrifices in that aspect. You know, you're never becoming a Division I athlete. You got to be in the top 5%
mm-hmm.
of high school athletes. And you don't get into the top 5% by doing what everybody else does.
Yeah.
You know, you got to do what the 5% are willing to do. And there's always someone out there who's willing to push a little farther or go a little harder than you. And so you got to chase that person. And that requires extra training, keeping up on your grades for sure.
Oh, that's a big.
I would say that because yes. nothing will stifle your dream of being a college athlete faster than bad academics.
Amen.
Right. And honestly, if we're being honest, high school in America, especially in public school, is not difficult. It's way harder in Canada.
Yeah.
Like,
from what I've heard,
yeah, like American public school, like turn in your assignments on time and you're going to get at least a B.
Yeah.
Like, it's not hard, man.
True.
Nah.
And just so show up.
That's what I would say. Yeah. Be willing to do the little extra because that's what got everybody here. You're going to be thrown into a room with all these high achievers.
Yeah.
Right. And if you haven't done that yet, you're going to fall by the wayside.
Mm.
So that would be my advice.
Bro, I'm so glad you mentioned that because I grew up playing basketball.
Uh-huh.
And so basketball was my thing. And I was naturally gifted at it. And I was like, easily I could have got a, you know, especially after my, because I had a great senior year.
Yeah.
I was like, yeah, I'm going to get a scholarship anyway. But up to that point, I always blamed my delay on politics within my school mm-hmm. and community. But had I been that 5% and not, and basically took time that I was with my boys or partying or whatever, you know what I'm saying? Practicing, there would have been no reason freshman through senior year, I would have been on the squad balling and made that transition into college a lot easier.
Yeah.
So I'm glad you mentioned like the sacrifice. Cause I didn't make the sacrifice. Like I didn't practice extra. I didn't work out extra. Like I was just going off the natural talent that I had and practice. Right. So I'm glad you mentioned like setting yourself apart is so key to and sacrificing that time to be able to make it, you know, and have the success that you guys have.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
and just to piggyback off that too, you know, it's cool because it's like the one thing that I keep coming back to is the choice of is the pain of discipline or choosing the pain of regret. You know what I'm saying? All it comes down to is like your choice. You know,
there's pain either way.
It's pain either way,
right,
man.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? You just might not see it yet, you know, but regardless. And so it's that effort of making a choice, you know, all right, this is my priority. I'm gonna make an effort for that. You know what I'm saying? Or even just like perspective wise, you know, it's the choice to see your glass half empty, or your glass half full.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And so I feel like the sooner you get that habit, you build that habit to intentionally choose something, you know, life will be a lot easier for you.
Amen. Nice. Yeah. I love that.
Appreciate it.
Well, let's
rapid fire.
Yeah, yeah.
All let's right. get it.
I'm ready.
Let's get into that.
I'm ready. Favorite pump up song, or I mean, like
hype song.
Hype song.
Oh, you got it. Which one is yours? I listen to a few. Man.
Mine's 100 shots right now.
100 shots.
100 shots.
Young Dolph?
Yeah, Young Dolph.
I was going to say.
Hey, okay.
That's
okay.
My number one right now.
Hey.
You know, I've been on like a more chill vibe. Not like a crazy vibe, you know what I'm saying? Nah. 20 minutes, man. Okay. Little Uzi.
Yeah, 20 okay.
Minutes. Okay. Yeah.
Nice. So nice.
Cool.
Yeah.
Good. All right. Any superstitions or rituals before games?
Oh.
I personally don't do that. I don't have anything ritual. I don't want to put it on nothing. You know what I'm saying? I don't want to be like, oh, dang, I didn't do this. I'm going to play bad. I can't. Right. You know what I'm saying?
I don't have, I mean, I have a general routine. I just have a checklist of things I like to do before the game. The order doesn't matter. Like I said, it's like I just have a few things I want to get done before the game. But one thing I guess I always do is I always play catch with somebody before the game. That's like my tradition, right?
Okay.
Nice. Do you ever like visualize, like walk through, like, you know, what you're going to do, what you're trying to accomplish or anything?
Yes. We actually have team visualization in the hotel the night before where our mental health specialist, we all lay down in the hotel in one of the ballrooms. They shut all the lights off. We have a pillow. And he has us basically closes our eyes and he walks us through a meditation and visualization session.
And that power is powerful, man.
We do that the night before every game. Some guys take it seriously. Some guys are on their phones or something distracting other people.
Laughing up in the corners.
Yeah. So like we gotta kick those guys out or something. But
it's helped. It's huge. Big time.
Yeah, it's been big. Yeah, I really enjoy it.
Like breath work.
The visualization part.
So. All right, if you guys could play with any athlete, past or present, who would it be?
Football or any sport?
Let's do football, then any sport. We'll do both. Football first.
Football, I'm going to say Ray Lewis.
Oh, let's go. Yes, sir.
That defensive mindset, man, that's something that must have been infectious. Oh, yeah. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But
yeah, that's a good one. That's a good choice. I would say for me, either Tom Brady or Peyton Manning, just to hear how they process the game. And like as a center, you kind of have to think the same way the quarterback does in terms of reading the defense and all that stuff. Obviously not to the same extent. His responsibility is the whole offense. My responsibility is really the front seven guys on offense, the O-line and the tight ends and running backs, but just being able to be around them and see how they would have prepared for games and what they saw and how they checked things at the line of scrimmage as a cerebral player like I am, I feel like that would have been just fascinating. Mm. See how they do things.
Yeah.
Yeah. Peyton Manning's mind was just different, man. He was different. The way he read all the defenses and the
size of his forehead, everything.
Yeah. Everything. Hey.
You could do this. You could tell, man. You could tell there was a lot of info up there.
Oh, yeah.
bro. Man.
All right. Now we'll go any athlete.
Okay.
Do any athlete.
Any athlete? Play with. Mike Tyson.
Oh.
Great choice. Yeah. Great Mike choice.
Bruh.
Just because he was my idol growing up, I would have loved to play baseball with David Ortiz.
Oh, yeah.
Big Poppy. Nice. Big Poppy, man. Yeah. He was big. He was lefty. I was big. I was lefty. I tried to model my swing after his. Like, man, I would have loved to play with it or just interact with him at the very least, you know?
Okay. Sick. Okay. Now, this is a big topic recently for some reason.
Okay.
Actually, I know why. But is it an easier transition for basketball players to play football or football players to play basketball?
This is the question for him, man.
I guess, yeah.
For him.
Yeah, because I did do both. And basketball is the only thing I ever won a state championship in. Unfortunately, I played in 6 state championship games and across 3 sports and only won one. Sucked.
Dang.
I think it would be easier for a football player to transition to playing basketball in the general sense. I think there are those freaks in the NBA who absolutely could make the transition to the NFL. Mm-hmm. But I think overall, like if you just picked someone random from the NFL, someone random from the NBA, I think the transition from football to basketball might be a little easier because I think there's just so much skill involved in basketball. It's hard for me to say that. I hesitate, but I think it's a lot easier to become less physical than it is to all of a sudden become extremely physical.
Absolutely.
And so it's like, I don't think, you know, any random NBA player could go into an NFL locker room and be physically prepared to play like that.
Mm.
I think an NFL player with some general basketball skills like could at least go in there and compete. They may suck badly, but like, yeah. at least go in there and compete. I don't know if a random NBA player could go in there and last 3 or 4 plays without their body breaking. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's just they're just not trained that way. Yeah. You know, which is fine. But again, like there's those top guys at the NBA level that I think absolutely could make the transition. Right, like Zion Williamson, he's basically the size of an offensive tackle, anyways.
Yeah,
like he could absolutely do it. You know, and obviously there's the freaks like LeBron played football his whole life. LeBron could easily make that transition. Yeah, but I would say if you picked a random guy from the NBA, random guy from the NFL, and I'll probably get all kinds of hate for this, but I think I think the transition from NFL to NBA would be maybe a little easier than NBA, the NFL. That's what I think.
Yeah. That was very well thought out, actually. I agree. I you know what I'm saying? I feel also, too, though, like, of course, you know, at different levels, you know, professional level, 100% agree, you know, with Connor. But, you know, at the high school level, you could get away with it. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Either or.
Right.
You can get away with it, you know. But when it comes to, like, a high level of competing and, you know, with everything – within, you know, like the aspect of being physical, you can't just, you know, go in there, not be physical. You can't do it.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, it's more than just a physical box out, you know, like, especially in the trenches, like it's.
Yeah. It's less of a skill, more just like, I just don't know if they could physically handle it.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like it's.
Or it's like, it's we obviously like mindset, we may not be very good, but we could physically handle basketball.
Yeah. Yeah. I believe so. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, for sure.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But again, I hesitate because I
like but taking on a pulling guard.
I was high school teammates with Frank Jackson. You know, like
it's tough, man. I don't see Chris Paul doing that. It's true. I just don't see Chris Paul doing
right. No, it's true.
So
it's true. Like again, I hesitate, right?
Because
I've played with professional basketball players before. Huh. And like I was teammates with one in high school, see him at the Powder League and stuff like that, and just going to my high school coach was close friends with, you know, Grant Hill and some of the other guards on the Jazz, and they would come practice with us in high school. Like, that's a different level of skill. Mm-hmm. And so, like, I'm not minimizing that. I just think more in the physical aspect.
Right. Yeah. No, I get it. Now, this is a big hot topic with Ant Edwards and Justin Jefferson. Yeah. So, yeah. And then they started a whole thing with other athletes about that. So I wanted to ask you guys your perspective. Yeah. My biggest thing would be because with football, you got to know so much, like the plays.
Yeah,
that's
true. There's so much that goes into memorizing plays and knowing where people need to be. And I feel like that would be one of the biggest things for
an NBA player. A football playbook is a lot bigger than a basketball playbook.
There's also a lot more different positions, different body types, different roles.
Just 11 people versus 5 people.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think that's true, too. Yeah, I hadn't thought about that.
Nice.
That's definitely true.
One more question, unless you have another one, Isaiah.
No, you go ahead, bro.
The drip, man. The drip. Are you are you that football player that be wearing the towels with the black visor and all the armbands, or what? What's drip like on game day?
Okay, me personally, I'm not excessive. You know what I'm saying? I have my own little personal drip. You know, it's just the tights, the turf tape, but like, you know, everything else that I have on, like I gotta have on, like the thumb hand tape, my hands are all taped up, you know what I'm saying? I'll wear a skull cap, but yeah, man, it's nothing crazy. You know, I don't have like 100, you know, armbands on, you know, like some people, I don't have like one arm, you know, one color sleeve, and then the other one's a different color.
You're feeling yourself though. Don't downplay. Don't downplay. I mean, don't downplay.
Play good. You know
a pair of cleats for each quarter.
No, that's not me. Yeah, okay, that's not me. Right. At least,
You know, I'm the same way. Mine's purely functional. Like I do. I've always done the eye black.
Yeah, yeah.
And to be honest, that originated because I didn't like that my face was red all the time.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm serious. So it's not as bad now as it was in high school. And so it's just been a tradition that I would smear my face with paint to cover up my rosy cheeks. Yeah. You know? And so I've just always done it. But then I do wear a towel on my snap hand side just to keep my hand dry.
Yeah.
That's really all I...
Gotcha.
And I'll let the undershirt hang out or something, but that's also more so my jersey doesn't hook under my belly and make me look extra fat. You know? So again, purely functional.
Gotcha.
So.
I do got one more. Grass or turf?
Grass.
Oh, yeah.
Grass, grass, grass.
Beads.
Grass.
Yeah. You know, I used to be a turf guy my whole life. My whole life, you know, and I'd be like, grass, oh my gosh, I don't want to play on that. Mm. You know, but I don't know what it is. This year, I finally, it just clicked in my mind, like, yeah, I like grass way better.
Probably because we just got brand new grass, and for the first time ever, our grass in our stadium is actually nice.
Absolutely. That's for
sure. It sucked before.
Yeah, now it's nice.
And what would you say is like the major differences, though, between playing on grass and turf?
It, for me, being a bigger guy, my joints hurt way worse after a game on turf than they do on grass.
Oh, yeah.
Like my knees and my ankles and hips are like achy after we play a game on turf. They're not after we play on grass.
Gotcha.
That's the biggest difference for me.
I agree. I mean, I remember like at Boise State, we'd always practice on turf, like all
turf, man.
Literally, yeah, we'd practice on the blue turf every day, all the time, you know, whether we're playing on grass or not, typically, you know. And so, like, I remember just, like, how my body felt, you know, my knees and my ankles, kind of like what Connor was saying, you know, that same impact every day because it's a different type of surface, obviously, you know. To even have different kind of cleats on, you know what I'm saying? You don't have screw-ins when you're on turf.
Right. Yeah.
So, you know, the different screw-ins
tear you up on turf. Holy crap.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying? So, like, just always practicing on turf, man, I'm like, man, my body hates this. But, like, we've been practicing on grass this whole season, you know what I'm saying? Like,
feeling good.
Yeah. I feel great. You know what I'm saying? Like, my body is, especially at this point in the season, I've never felt, honestly, so good in my life. Obviously, you know, kudos to the training staff, you know, the nutrition guys and how we go about planning our practices and our schedule. But regardless, though, you know, you're still out there grinding, still practicing. There's a difference.
We practice hard.
Oh,
yeah. It ain't like we're messing around, though.
No, it's a grind, but it's good.
Yeah. That's what, man, you think – you know, associations would take that into consideration, you know, for players. Because I remember when Aaron Rodgers tore his Achilles, everybody was like, see, you need to get rid of the turf. Yeah. Like,
well, what is it? The Euro League or whatever? There's a soccer league that banned all turf fields. It's required that you have a grass field. I think it's a soccer league. It's not the MLS.
Okay.
It might be the Euro League.
Huh.
And once they did that, I think a lot of people thought a lot of the professional sports would follow.
Yeah.
And I mean, we just haven't done it. I mean, it is a lot cheaper than grass, but, you know, look at the Raiders and the Cardinals. You can still have domes and roll grass in and out.
Very sure you can.
Maybe not so much in those cold environments. I don't know. Maybe there's probably a lot of things we don't know
that
make it hard, but I know there's one professional soccer league that's banned turf fields.
Well, they're smart. Well, they are smart because,
I mean, no
Lambeau do it.
Yeah.
They true. Cold. True. They stick with the grass.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's true.
So, yeah.
One more question. Sorry.
Oh, yeah,
I promise.
You're good. Keep firing away. I'm having a blast.
What's if you could play at the next level, where would you want to go?
Ooh.
Dude, it's so hard to make it anywhere that'll take me.
Yeah. Same.
I mean, you have to be, at least for an interior offensive lineman like me, you have to be top 50 in the world at what you do to make a roster.
Wow.
You know, and so it's like, when the odds are that slim, I don't even think about my choice.
Yeah.
Preferably somewhere that doesn't have state taxes.
For real.
If I had to choose, it would be somewhere that doesn't have state taxes.
Texas.
Texas. Seattle, randomly. Basically, any of the teams in the South.
Yeah.
You know, I'd love to. Mm. The government's going to take almost half, anyways. I don't want to go over half with the state taxes, too.
True.
Yeah. I think for me, like, obviously, you know, I grew up a Giants fan. That'd be kind of cool. solidify that for me, you know, my young self. But same time, like Connor said, dude, like, shoot, hey, if you want me, I'm there. I don't care if, you know, you're the Patriots, you know, whoever, man. Whoever.
Even the Browns.
Hey, man, the Browns would be cool. You can learn from Miles Garrett.
Miles Garrett?
Yeah, true.
All those guys, man. You know what I'm saying? But I know what you mean. But anywhere, bro. I don't care.
And I got one more quick one, too.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Keep them rolling, man.
We're seeing more and more professional athletes come out of BYU. Does that give you guys any hope or junction to just continue going forward? True. And how has that been, seeing guys like come out of BYU and jump right into the big dogs?
I think for sure. you know, for sure. I think, you know, it gives you confidence, right? That because in the past, it's kind of been, there was a period in the 80s and 90s where BYU was a powerhouse and pumping dudes into the league every single year. Mm-hmm. Then there was kind of a lull for a little bit where we kind of weren't, early to mid 2000s, where we had some superstars come out of BYU, but it wasn't as consistent as it had been in years past. And I think that's kind of when, you know, the stigmas with the NFL and BYU kind of started to form and things. And now I think we're pulling out of that, especially since now we're being successful in a Power Four conference. You know, the number one thing that determines draft picks more than anything else is wins.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it honestly more so than skill. You know, there's a player, you know, if they're gonna take a player with similar skill sets and one was on a team that went 11-1 and competed for a national championship and the other was, you know, 7-5, they're gonna take the 11-1 guy every time.
Mm.
Right. And so I think especially with this season, I think we'll probably see more, you know, successful guys in the NFL because we're winning. Right. And because I think we definitely have the guys with the talent to do it, right? But so much of the NFL is fit in your situation,
mm-hmm.
and opportunities, mm-hmm. right? And so what winning does is it gets you drafted higher, which gives you more opportunities in training camp to prove yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Free agents are on a very short leash. You make a few mistakes, they'll just cut you,
mm-hmm.
right? But if you're drafted, they invest in you and they're willing to work with you a little more because they've had to fork out a little more money for you. Right. And when teams do that and give guys those chances, the BYU guys typically are pretty successful. So I think just the success of the team is really what's going to help determine whether or not we are able to pump guys into the league. We have to consistently win, mm-hmm. and consistently compete for conference and national championships. That's when you'll start to see, you know, more and more BYU guys getting to and being successful in the NFL.
Gotcha.
And, you know, especially just with that being said, you know, like winning teams, you know, obviously they're doing something right, you know, and typically most of the time, you know, is based off of their culture, you know, and a lot of these successful programs base their culture, you know, the way they process, you know, the game plan, not just game plan, just, you know, just the way of life essentially, is the exact way the NFL teams do, you know what I'm saying? And so, that's why as well, you know, it brings a lot of eyes too when you're winning is because, you know, obviously they're doing something right. Obviously they're building habits that, you know, we want, we look for. You know, whereas when you go to schools that aren't as successful, typically, you know, it's because of, you know, truthfully, like some habits. Obviously, you know, you can talk about the skill, the talent, whatever. But at the end of the day, too, the little things do play a part in it, and that's what they look for, you know.
It's a great point.
Nice. Yeah.
Well, thanks for joining us on this podcast episode with Brothers in the Foyer and Connor and Isaiah. Thank you guys so much for clearing your schedule for us, man. We know how busy you are with school and football. So
yeah, no, thanks for having us, man. This has been a blast.
It's been awesome.
Definitely. Yeah, our biggest hope is that, you know, having you guys on, our audience are able to see what it takes, you know, to be a D1 athlete. Not only just a D1 athlete, but just, you guys mentioned just having a great mindset around what you do, the work ethic that needs to go into being successful, you know, at whatever you do. And so we hope our audience were able to catch a glimpse of that, you know, from your guys' perspective, you know, being athletes and being in a culture that's cultivating good habits and good behaviors to be successful in life. So thank you both very much for sharing.
Absolutely. Man.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Appreciate y'all having us. For
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, make sure you go like, subscribe to all of our platforms. We're on all platforms, YouTube, Apple, Spotify. We're all over the place.
But, TikTok.
TikTok. Yeah. So go like and subscribe to this channel. We'll continue this series. We'll have more athletes come on, both current and ex NFL, just all athletes come on and share their thoughts and opinions on the game and their faith and their journey. So stay tuned for our next episode. And thanks once again.
Thank you, guys.
Appreciate it.
Ooh, man.